and welcome to Fidelity Connects by Fidelity Investments Canada, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Dividend investor Don Newman joins Pamela Ritchie for another Fidelity Connects podcast, where he discusses dividend-paying companies and dividend yields in today's current environment and in the year ahead. He points out that dividend-paying companies may be a great option for investors who are seeking yield. He says these companies are trading at a very attractive price, are maintaining their dividends for the most part, and yielding roughly the same amount at high-yield bonds and with more opportunity for upside capture as the economy reopens in 2021 and 2022. And as a vaccine becomes more of a reality, Don says this bodes well for dividend-paying companies. A vaccine would make these companies more attractive because stocks like energy and banks depend on the economy reopening. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on November 24th, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada, ULC, or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Don, I'll begin with the vaccine trade. It's something we've been talking about. It is material, clearly, to markets. What does it mean for a dividend investor, for those that are looking to perhaps not the fangs, so-called?
Sure. From my perspective, this is actually a pretty big deal for dividend investing and dividend-paying companies. I think we talked about the last time I was on, there had been a lot of sort of defense played this year. There are dividend companies, to a larger extent, a lot of the usual sectors you invest in, I sort of classified as, as COVID losers. That gets turned on its head. If you actually have a viable vaccine that can be distributed out to the population and things eventually, and the market's not going to look in the next month or two, and it's sort of looking past right now what's probably going to be a pretty rough winter, but out to 2021 and 2022, a lot of dividend paying companies actually start looking pretty attractive. The sectors that have been beaten up the most start to become the ones you want to look at, and you can see that in what's going on in the last couple days. So if you look at, banks start to benefit, telcos start to benefit, energy, which has just absolutely been beaten up. It's not a huge dividend-paying sector, but, some of the pipelines, and I actually own some dividend-paying energy companies, that comes back. Insurance benefits from higher rates, and then real estate really gets turned on its head.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just putting up the yield slide here. You could just tell us a little bit about this, because it's speaking to exactly what you're talking about.
Sure. Well, this is really interesting. And sort of about a week ago, I went to one of our product people, Stuart Ng, and said, listen, Stu, it's really interesting. I'm looking at the yield on, my funds, and I'd be really interested to see what it looks like, because they still seem pretty darn good. And, everyone I've talked to is talking about, we're having to reach for yield. We're having to look for, there's no yield anymore. Rates are at zero. Where do I go? And I thought about, well, let's see if we can put a slide together for, some of our clients and just talk about, well, where is the yield? And to a large extent across the market, it's absolutely been compressed. You see, like 10-year governments, U.S. equities are down there, U.S. 10-year. The dots on the top are the 10-year average, and you can see the bar chart is where things are right now. Canadian corporates, U.S. corporates, even high yield. And if you look at this, it says, high yield's about 6. I was looking yesterday on my Bloomberg, the high yields have actually compressed down to the 5% level, and the same euro high yields. But if I go and look at, you know, sort of dividend funds and the dividend funds I run, the yields are actually at or above average over the last 10 years, because it's been, we sort of had talked before in previous conversations, a lot of the dividend companies have kind of been viewed as that COVID losers. So I think this is actually becomes a really good opportunity. You can buy a good dividend fund that yields sort of, you know, somewhere around 4%. A lot of the stocks, you know, are still sort of in recovery mode, so there's still upside, but you clip a good yield that you really can't get anywhere in the market. And at the same time, the whole vaccine thing sort of benefits you to the upside. So it becomes a good yield with upside argument that's actually pretty compelling at this point.
Okay, here's something that seems to be compelling in the markets, and you are the first person on Fidelity Connects to talk about sort of the confirmation of who the Treasury Secretary will be in the next administration. It's been announced, Janet Yellen. What's that doing?
That is very pro-market. I think a lot of people, including myself, wouldn't have been surprised if Biden sort of had to, I would say, like sort of pay back the left side of the electorate and put someone like Elizabeth Warren in there. And that had been a name that had been thrown around and is sort of definitely not pro-market. This is about as pro-market as you possibly can get for a guy who is going to be kind of really tough on sort of banks and corporates and all that stuff. He went about as pro-market as you could have been. And this has really turned into, between sort of Powell and Yellen, you basically got team printing press going there. So you know that, you know, there's going to be support for the market, whether it's setting up sort of huge stimulus or, you know, the Fed going in and printing more. This is about as dovish a pick as he possibly could have made for the market. And I think you can see the market reacting well to it.
Absolutely. You know, let's go through, because also, as you had mentioned, when we spoke to you last time, you were talking a bit about buckets of where things go, and there were things that weren't working yet, and we seem to have come to that moment where yet is now. So let's go through performance actually recently for you, and then talk a bit about what we've seen and where you kind of think things are going.
So I mentioned like a lot of the first part of the year, and we probably have some charts to throw up here, had been really about sort of, you know, avoiding bombs. And you can see sort of my, you know, my benchmark is down sort of a lot year to date. And I'd managed to do a really good job sort of avoiding things. Been pretty conservative, you know, putting a fair bit of money to work in March. And then, you know, what the vaccine thing has really done is sort of, you know, cause a, you know, a little bit of rotation. And certainly my portfolios have, you know, have rotated and are a little bit of rotation. But I also talked about having three distinct buckets in the portfolio. And the one was sort of the good paying dividend stocks that, you know, they're good yields, they're there for you. The secular winners. And then I also had the bucket that was the beaten up, depressed, the stocks are down 30, 40, 50, 60, 70%. You know, thankfully I was able to buy a lot of them at the bottom, but they hadn't worked and they've been probably lagging. And I wonder, people were wondering, well, you know, Don, why do you have some energy in here? You know, why do you have some beaten up cyclicals? And this is the reason: you didn't know when the vaccine news would come. But if you actually have the world open up, some of these stocks that are down 70%, the world starts to think, oh, wait, what if things go back to a little bit normal? So there's some stuff in real estate that's going to absolutely fly. Energy, you can see what it's doing in the last couple of days. Maybe people eventually fly again. Maybe they travel again. You know, the secular with EV and renewables, it's absolutely there. But a lot of these things got thrown out and left for dead. And I wanted to make sure that the portfolios had some of this stuff. If and when things actually changed, that there was still some really good upside left in the portfolio instead of just having the stuff that was all already working.
So let's go. Some questions are rolling in here now, and I'll just let you know, your colleague Steve Buller on Friday, he gave us a landscape of real estate, talked about what hadn't worked, seems to be working a bit more, but, you know, kind of left it an open question, answered a lot of questions, but we're watching real estate and REITs right now. I mean, your thoughts, one of the questions He's about.
So what I've been doing, the playbook earlier this year, and I didn't see Steve's talk, but the playbook earlier this year, and sort of I was on it and did relatively well with it. You buy industrial because everyone needs to ship from home. Healthcare is okay because it's kind of staply. And then you go in data centers because everybody needs to, there's more data going crazy. Everyone's work from home and you got to connect remotely. That stuff is all still fine, but I think there's the stuff that got beaten up and sort of got thrown out of the water was retail. Just absolutely destroyed. Some of those stocks were down 60-70%. You had a look in office. It's still questionable how much people will go back to the office. Will it be a split or not? But the stocks were absolutely trashed. So those are sort of two of the absolute bigger sectors. The other thing was just looking at apartments and all these things I've sort of bought a fair bit of in the last little while. But I think of it about, did anyone want to live in a New York City apartment? Did anyone want to live in a San Francisco apartment? Yeah, during COVID, not really, but these things got really cheap for like the first time ever. And so, I've gone and taken a look and said, well, you know what? Maybe New York's actually going to be an okay place to live in the next couple of years. And this, some of the stuff was trading at like 6 caps, while a lot of other real estate was trading at 4, 4.5. And this is really high quality stuff. So let's go and buy some real estate in San Francisco and in New York City. Let's take an up look at some beaten up malls in the U.S. that you think are going to survive. That, in the off chance things really go well and maybe people want to go and socialize back at a mall someday. Who knows? Some of these things could double off the bottom. You don't know. We're sort of reliant and fingers crossed on the vaccine works in this. This is it, but they're not at all-time highs. They're not all the way up here. They're actually sitting on the ground. And if things actually progress and the Fed keeps the stimulus and the Treasury with Yellen is good, and we can kind of bridge the gap through a pretty tough winter, some of these things out in 21 or 22 could actually have some really, really good rebound potential. So that's where I've been looking these days.
Oh, interesting. Lots of questions rolling in here. Here's one for you. How are you using, Don, your cash waiting right now? Are you putting it to work in opportunities or with the market highs? Are you being a bit more cautious?
Yeah, different cash weightings. I had a fair bit going into September, October. The cash weighting came down a fair bit. It's probably sitting in that sort of the five, between 4.5% and 6% level right now. So it's just in the last couple of weeks with the vaccine and things going on, and actually just the sell-off in September and October, a fair bit of money had gone into the market in September and October already, just because the market had come off 10%. And then it looked like you're getting more certainty with the election and certainly the vaccine. And as I mentioned, what I've been buying over the last probably few weeks, just with the vaccine news, is that I'm not buying stocks at an all-time high. I'm buying a lot of stocks that are actually probably between down 25 and down 60. And like that's where I want to be, sort of adding some sort of a little bit of cyclical stuff, but where I've got at least... I'm not having to worry too much about the valuations, because the valuations are on the ground right now. What I do have to hope for is that we do have a sort of recovery sometime in 21 and in 22, and these things are worth more than they're trading at today, which I think probably will be the case.
One of the other things that's coming into view, well, it's maybe not coming into view, it's an open question, is the discussion of reparations for technology companies with a Biden administration. Does that go through? Does it wait? To what extent? And so on. Because some of the big tech we think about are not necessarily the dividend providers, I'm just mostly curious where you think that goes, and if that then provides further lift to perhaps parts of the market.
So I don't know about sort of the reparations things. There's obviously going to be a number of sort of lawsuits, monopoly based, that are already going with some of the attorney generals in the U.S. Just on too much market power. But I think, we talked about this going in, and certainly I've been playing that sort of trade, and it was a number of guys who really played it well in our group. But sort of the bigger COVID really exacerbated the issue of bigger is better. Bigger is stronger, more money, more capital, more ability to have people work from home, faster to the cloud. That stuff is great. It is possible with a sort of a vaccine, you know, once again, you sort of knock on wood, that the market kind of takes a break with some of the big secular winners and says, listen, you're still good. You'll still make a sort of a decent amount of money over time. But that advantage has moved a little bit back to the smaller players. And we talked about it just before we were coming on here, but the biggest move in the market over the last 3 weeks, the small caps are having their best month of all time right now. And a lot of that money is coming out of sort of the large cap winners, where everybody knows the story. Everybody knows sort of the theory. They're still great companies, but they're priced like great companies at this point. And so does a little bit, it's not necessarily that they go down, but they just may lag a little bit, or just, you know, I'd say take a time out on the secular story if the vaccine story is actually for real. And you see a little bit of a rotation into the small caps. And then, you know, for me, it's nice because it's like a lot of the roadblocks for some of the dividend players, you know, potentially get removed. And as I said, like you sit on a 4% yield and you've actually got headwinds that turn into tailwinds for a lot of the traditional dividend paying sectors.
You won't believe how many questions are rolling in for you. I'm going to try and get as many in as I can. Okay, here's one. So to what extent are you investing in the United States? And the currency question, you know, I mean, we've been watching the dollar sort of mark down. Now there seems to be a little bit of a hiccup here. Where do you see the dollar going? And is it at play at all?
I try not at sort of 76. I think we're at 76 and a half cents or something like that. I kind of, you know, view that as not going to blow me out of the water one way or another. Certainly if, you know, if energy comes back a little bit here with the cyclical play, it's generally helpful for the currency. But, you know, we are running, you know, pretty big deficits. The economy is not, I wouldn't classify it as strong yet. I sort of put the currency aside. And if I think I can find companies that are going to generate me like really good returns. Any currency move, I think, gets trumped by what I can find. I think things in Canada are fine. There's some, obviously, you know, the banks. I put a fair bit of money back into the banks in earlier in the year, and they've been reacting well. It makes things life a lot easier if people go back to work. Interest rates are a little bit higher. NIMs expand a little bit better. And obviously, the government's done a terrific job of, you know, sort of spreading out the provisions that they need to take by sort of, you know, with the CERB and all that sort of thing.
How the Canadian government has handled this versus, you know, countries across the globe. Is that part of your investment thesis? I'm just curious if that draws investors in because the government is either doing a good job or a bad job. Like, how do you?
Yeah, you can. It's sort of, there's short term and long term, and obviously the long term of running massive deficits is not particularly healthy. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, taxes at some point are probably going to have to go up. But from the standpoint of bridging the gap, the Canadian government has done just about as good a job as you could do. Allowing people to sort of make it through COVID. I know there's a lot of people that are still hurting, you know, out there, and it is really tough. And we'll just sort of knock on wood that we can get a vaccine and hopefully we can get as many people back to work as we possibly can. But it certainly has been helpful, and it's been very helpful to our financial institutions. The big worry going in here, and certainly I certainly had this worry, what the government's done has changed was basically that you were going to have to take huge provisions. Capital was going to go down to levels where you're going to have to do equity raises, and you're going to have sort of a 2008, 2009 version of the U.S. where everyone stocks went down 50, 70%. And then suddenly you had to raise capital at the bottom. You dilute yourself and it's impossible for your share price to come back. Capital positions at the banks are fine. Dividends are fine. We're now, the market is sort of taking a look. We didn't have to dilute ourselves in the downturn. There may be bumps in the road, but out to 2021, 2022, things certainly look a little bit better. And that's why you've seen sort of banks Do that. So I'm looking everywhere, certainly in the US. The US is a big part of my real estate looking right now because that's a good portion. The real estate market's way bigger then. So most of the money when I'm doing real estate is going into beating up things in the US. And I've been looking, I was the REIT analyst back in 2005. So this is a sector I actually know pretty well and I know where to look. This isn't new to me. So if there's a trade to the upside, I've got the things I used to look at and I've been moving some money pretty quickly into some of them.
So just to tie that up in a bow, and I think you've hit on most of it, but it's net-net is this rotation to what we seem to be calling a more of a value trade, if you believe that's what it is. Is it good for Canada overall?
I mean, it's anything that where you're potentially sort of opening up, and it's certainly good on the cyclical front. And a lot of Canada is based, we're an export, sort of based country. And if you can get people to where there's travel again, things open up, and it's going to take time. Like people are not jumping on planes in the next couple months. But in 2000, late 21 or 22, if people say, listen, I've been shut indoors for a year and a half. I haven't gone anywhere. I'd like to take a trip or, I'd like to do something, have an experience that I haven't experienced for a while. I'd like to go and see some people that I haven't seen in a couple of years. And we can actually do that. That's probably pretty good for things like oil and probably, good for some of the cyclicals in the market where Canada can... Canada produces a lot of stuff. So I think it just net-net, opening up is definitely good for Canada as well as the U.S. and it's good for the world.
Yep, it's good for the world, absolutely. Okay, other question coming in here, looking at some of these opportunities. What's your process for evaluating them, helping in your decision whether they'll come back or, in fact, eliminating a position? So a bit of a sell question, how do you do that? And just adding to that, is there a piece within the balance sheet that you look to, or is it the discussions with management teams? Just kind of sketch it out for us.
Yeah, so you want to be looking on the balance sheet question. It's basically sort of two things. Can you service the debt? Can you pay the dividend? When is the debt due? And is our view that you can roll that debt over. So at this point, I think you want to be looking almost for me. I want to be going with balance sheets that are decent, but probably, I move the dial down a little bit. I don't need quite the fortress balance sheet anymore. I just need to make sure because some of these cyclicals. The stocks that are going to move the most in a cyclical trade are ones that don't have great balance sheets. So you gotta be able to do the work, figure out, listen, can you make your maturities? Are you willing to refi things? What can you refi the debt at? And if it's a reasonable rate, suddenly it becomes, if you find stocks where they're saying you can refi your debt at 3.5 or 4 and there's a dividend that's 6, suddenly you're sort of like, well, this is interesting. The credit market is not worried about these guys. And the equity market is. The equity market may want to take a cue from the credit market. And the credit market says these guys are okay. Chances are the equity is probably okay and has a fair bit of upside. So I'm looking at that, a number of stuff. And then our analysts have models on all the companies. And this is a great thing to do is say, listen, this is beaten up a little bit. Let's go and do a deep dive. Do you think they're okay? What's the debt look like? Is it a little bit, if it's rock solid, that's great. If it's a little high, let's delve into this a little bit more and make sure that we think we've got things covered. And if things are covered, is there a fair bit of upside? In some cases, there definitely is. In terms of things you sort of sell or trim back on, some of this stuff is the, like pretty good companies that are super defensive, that haven't gone down or are, but really don't benefit at all. Sort of like their businesses are priced as normal. Everything's fine. But we're trading at really high multiples, and you tend to sort of trim those back because they don't benefit from the market opening up at all. And if they're at reasonable multiples, I just keep them. But if they're trading at all-time high multiples and they were dependent on sort of being a COVID winner, then I think you sell them. And this is one thing I'd like to highlight. There is a big difference between secular winners and COVID winners. Don't make this mistake between the two. COVID winners are companies that were going up because COVID was there and their businesses got a lot better. Think, I won't name names, but think soup companies, companies that have, that clean your hands. There's a, you know, a bunch of things. Someone who makes a laptop and that's all they do. Everyone's bought their laptop now. So things for those companies will not actually get better next year. They'll probably get incrementally a little bit worse. Then there's the secular winners who will just sort of, you know, power through this. But I think you want having strictly COVID winners in your portfolio right now is probably not going to be. I think you need a fair bit of balance.
I just to try and fit in the question of do you look at demographics? So if you take that we have aging populations throughout, you know, this country and many of our neighbors and around the world. I mean, just sort of put into context the importance of income, right? I mean, this is, we know.
Yeah, it is amazing because I do get a lot of the questions and it's like, it doesn't seem like the Fed is going to be inching to raise rates anytime soon. So it is really hard right now. You want to be a conservative investor and generally, you know, I consider myself a pretty, you know, conservative investor, but I also have been around long enough that I know what works when things change. And I've got to get my portfolio sort of appropriately with the different buckets and move things within buckets. But, you know, sitting on a GIC or sitting on just government bonds, even like dividend yields in a dividend fund of 4%, you're 1% away from buying, you know, like high yield bonds. These are like the worst of worst companies and their high yield bonds are trading at like 5%. You can buy some really good companies in a diversified portfolio with a 4% yield. It seems like a pretty good place. And a lot of the companies are actually still sort of still down year to date. You have an ability to, I'd like to think, you clip that yield. And, you know, I do come back, the conservative part of me always comes back to looking at the, you know, being a student of history and looking at 100 years worth of data. And it does tell you that you get somewhere close to 50% of your total return from yields over time. And certainly if you're starting at a 4% yield, you know, 10 years from now, if nothing goes right for you, you've clipped over 40% on your portfolio, and hopefully things can go right for you, and you get that 40%, and then you get a lot of upside as well. So I think at this point, the vaccine has made this actually a pretty interesting place to be.
That's the case for dividends. Don Newman, thank you for joining us on Fidelity Connect.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. Please visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.